Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
It is a beautiful 75-degree day in Southern California. The crowd filing into the Forum in Inglewood.
Inside the Forum at the corner of Manchester and Prairie.
Whether you're kicked back in the lounge or grinding in the film room, the block is always hot for the Lakers.
The Los Angeles Lakers are the world champions of basketball.
It's the Great Western Forum.
Chased out by James. Blocked by LeBron.
The Magic, he pivots a 360 turn. He's around one. He's around two. Magic to Green underneath.
On the ball to Shaq. Screen.
A windmill.
They're going crazy at the Fabulous Forum.
Hosted by Anthony Irwin, Pete Zayas, and Jovan Buha.
It's showtime.
But after game one and like actually see, because part of it for me was that we had not, in my opinion, really seen this group against the real basketball team. So, like you look at the last five games of the season, they play Dallas and Utah, two tanking teams. They play Phoenix and Golden State without half of their starters. And then the OKC game, LeBron doesn't play in, so we don't get to see what like the full strength version of this group was. So to me, there was like a little bit of a crapshoot element of we've seen some things, and like there's been some things like Luke Kennard, what was a bright spot. That Dallas game has the triple double, and he steps up as a playmaker and a passer, and Marcus returns and looks pretty good coming off of his return. LeBron is playing great basketball. Like there were some things that I was encouraged by to close the season, but I was just like, what does this look like against a real basketball team? What does this look like against a certain amount of defense and athleticism? And I was really going to weigh what that looked like in game one. And I came away so impressed with game one that I actually changed my prediction after game one to Lakers in seven now. I'm drinking the purple Kool-Aid. And I think that the big thing for me was it felt like the Lakers were playing chess and the Rockets were playing checkers. And the thing that stood out from everything that was said was that Ime Udoka after the game says that the Rockets expected Kevin Durant to be out, that just the media didn't know that. They didn't let us know that. That's why they listed him as questionable. And the fact that that was their game plan with 2 days to prepare for no Kevin Durant was like, it just blew my mind. I was like, how is this? They look like they were planning for Kevin Durant. And then 2 hours before the game, they get the news, no Kevin Durant. And now they're scrambling and like trying to figure things out. It was like, no, they had 2 days to prepare for this. And this was the approach. So I just walked away. I'm like, I don't care how many players the Lakers are without. Like, if they have such a tactical advantage between JJ and LeBron and Marcus, and it just, I'm like, I mean, again, seven game series is still a long series, and I think Houston will talk about some adjustments and there'll be some things they do better. But I just left that first game being like, so many things went right for Houston. They get 21 offensive rebounds. Lakers turn the ball over 20 times. They take 27 more shots and they took the same amount of free throws. So it wasn't like the Lakers had 40 free throws and the Rockets had 15 and it was this like giant disparity. No, same amount of free throws. They get 27 more scoring chances. And the game was like never really in doubt. It was the Lakers basically took the game by its horns in the beginning of the first quarter, are winning. They led for 93% of the game. And it just like, it never really felt like Houston figured out anything that worked on like either side of the ball outside of a little bit of ball pressure, forcing the Lakers in the turnovers, but then the Lakers trimmed down on that, right? In some of the transition stuff. But I just left that game being like, if this is the game plan and the approach from the Houston side, and that does not dramatically change going into game two, I mean, it's the Lakers at seven might be too pessimistic. It might even be shorter than that.
Man, I picked seven before the series. And I'm with you, Jovan. I think we might be talking about fewer games going here, which would be absolutely critical here for the Lakers if they could somehow make that happen and LeBron gets a little bit of extra rest.
The thing I've been banging the table about for the last month, that, man, if people looked at Houston the way that they looked at the Lakers and just the deficit model that we were talking about earlier, Houston is not good. I've been arguing we've got a real good chance in this series because, and it's mostly because of them not being good. Now, we might be a little less not good, a little more not good, a little worse than them, right?
Double and triple negatives, yeah.
We might be a little worse than them. I'm not saying we're going to win the series, but Houston is not good. And any of the teams, of the top teams, in my opinion, of the other five teams that made it above the play-in line in the West, if they had their dudes and weren't shorthanded, any one of those teams would have smacked them. They've got holes on the defensive end. They can't dribble the ball. Half their wings can't, like, do stuff mid-play. It can't hit a pull-up jumper. Can't, like, drive and kick to an open guy. You know, like, from a skill set standpoint, like, to me, they were one of my two really fascinating teams at the beginning of the year with them in Dallas because they just went so big. And, like, picture those 21 offensive rebounds and then add Steven Adams to that. And
yeah,
their whole theory of victory was just, we're going to smash you in the face just over and over again. And hell, it might have worked had they kept Steven Adams. But without him, they're like, they're really good on the boards and they're strong and they're physical, but they're not like, we can't do anything about this. And so that is part of why I looked at the odds to start the series. And I was like, I don't think we should be favored, but this, what was it, like 9-1 type of underdog or something?
It was wild.
Yeah. And it's like, y'all, like, I'm not even making commentary on the Lakers. It's like, have y'all watched Houston? They're not good. Not in like high level playoff team type of good.
Yeah.
It reminded me, Ime's series so far has reminded me of, I'll keep the story short, but I coached when I graduated. I came out of high school and I graduated, and my first couple of years in college, I coached like a JV basketball team. Right. And yeah, we ran the triangle. We called it Fist. Mm-hmm. And one of the teams that we played against had scouted us. So every time I called Fist, they would go zone. And then I had a zone offense. It's a pretty, you know, simple stuff. We would just call it pig. Mm-hmm. And it was basically just like this high post, high low offense that we would run because we had two tall guys. And so this guy shows up for the second time that we play them in league play. And he thinks he has us completely figured out. And he goes, I call Fist and he goes, zone, 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 zone. And so they would do that. And I was like, okay, how can I get around this in the simplest way with these like sophomores and juniors and freshmen, right? Mm-hmm. So I say, just reverse it. If I call Fist, we're running our zone offense. And if and if I call pig, we're running Fist. Mm-hmm. And we started doing that. And this guy just lost his mind. He had no idea what to do. He's screaming at his guys. He's getting super duper angry. He's like, how can you guys not figure this out? They just reversed their play. And I'm just listening. And like, I'm watching Ime on the sideline. Where's that play where Reed Shepherd throws the ball out of bounds, right? He tries to throw that skip pass and it goes out over the corner shooter. And Ime like looks at his coach. He's like, I can't believe I have to play this guy. Like you could basically make out what he's saying there. And it's just like, I don't know how he has gotten to this point with this team, and this stuff hadn't been pointed out. And Pete, I love the point that you make about like how if the Lakers were dealing with all of the stuff that Houston had dealt with over the course of the year, where like, imagine if LeBron James, you had made this point on our show on the Hook a little while back. Imagine if LeBron was in group chats saying the things about Rui Hachimura that like,
it'd still be a national storyline. It would still be brought up every week. Yeah.
And he brought up, he was like, problem is your next best player can't shoot or play defense. He's talking about Şengün there. It's like, he's just hitting up everybody with that. Yeah. Like, come on.
Blown me away.
It's a lot of Josh Okogie going on. There's a little bit too much Josh Okogie if I'm Houston. Like I know that Tari Eason had this like 3 month stretch where he shot under 30% on threes. So I understand why they're leaning toward Okogie. But we saw like Eason went 7-for-7, 2-for-2 on threes. I'm like, that's a very like low hanging fruit adjustment of if you kind of flip their minutes and their role. Mm-hmm. I think Tari Eason should be in there. But yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of things with the Houston side that I just don't understand.
Yeah, well, if people don't look at them with the same skepticism, right? Like if they just look, like if the Lakers had the same season and the same circumstances with the same players, we'd be getting fried even going into the playoffs, and rightfully so.
Imagine how I would have handled it if the Lakers wouldn't have, like, when they lost Steven Adams and they didn't have Fred VanVleet and they didn't, their front office didn't do anything at all to address either of those losses. Could you imagine how I would have handled that on my show.
You're still mad about Drew Timmy.
I am. I'm going to go down to my grave. Like, but no, I do want to talk, though, about those adjustments, though, because I do think that, like, you know, I joke about Ime Udoka, but there are things that I think that can be done here. One of the things that I'm going to be kind of looking for is because Okogie spent a lot of time guarding LeBron. And I have found my it's this weird roster makeup thing that Houston has, Jovan. I'm sure you've noticed it too, that like they are all these crazy athletic, longer wing athletes, right? But they don't have a ton of like shifty lateral movers defensively. And I think that's why before the series, I was kind of looking for Luke Kennard to have a pretty big, now I didn't think he would go 27 points and, you know, 5 of 5 from 3-point range, but Okogie feels like the only guy that they have who can realistically kind of sort of stay in front of Kennard and stay attached. Cause even Amen Thompson, he was gassed also by the end of the game too, but mm-hmm. Defensively, I feel like they have to pull Okogie off of LeBron and see what they can do as far as limiting Kennard's impact on the game. Is there anything that you're looking for in game two here?
I think first and foremost, Kevin Durant, like what happens with KD, does he play? Does he not? I think it has a massive ripple effect on both sides of the ball, because I think one of the things that stood out to me from the season series, especially those two games in Houston, is Ime doesn't really trust Clint Capella. And so you look at that first game in Houston and he progressively got played off of the floor in that second half. And they closed that game small, which allowed DA to come back in, get the offensive rebounds and the putbacks. Then that second game with Şengün back, by the second half, they basically just went Şengün and small ball, or their version of small ball, which is Jabari and KD at the 4-5 down the stretch of the second half. So I think this is going to morph once KD is back into Şengün or small ball with Jabari and KD. That's going to be the way that they go. Maybe there's a little bit of Clint Capella tied to the Jackson Hayes minutes, because maybe he can kind of survive in that. But if it's Ayton or even like the LeBron minutes, I think Capella probably should not be out there from the Houston side. So I think that's something that, like, that's a quick rotation change that they can make once KD is back. It does slot everybody a little bit more appropriately, where again, now you don't have to rely on a Josh Okogie or Jay Sean Tate. Like, some of these guys should not be playing. People make that point for some of the Lakers guys, but we could also make the same point for some of the Houston guys. So I think that's a big thing where, their offense just looked entirely aimless, I guess would be the word I would come up with. I don't really know what they were trying to do. And if you look at the Lakers side, they were targeting Reed Sheppard, Alperen Şengün, or Clint Capella on basically every single possession. Yep. It was one of those three guys, bring them into the action. And with Capella, they had the three straight possessions where it's the Luke hook, Jake had a drive, and then they had the lob to DA. And then, you know, Reed, it's attacking him in the post and then drawing the help over. Now you have some weak side actions with Şengün. You're testing his footwork in the pick and roll. Like, the Lakers had three clear entry points into Houston's defense. On the Lakers side, or the Houston offensive side, they had the one play early in the game where Amen Thompson gets Luke Kennard. It one-on-one, they space out. He takes Luke off the dribble, goes to the left side and glides to the rim and scores. Then they do not attack Luke Kennard for like the rest of the game. I can't remember a single possession where they really went at Luke Kennard. Lakers just hit him on Josh Okogie and they did not have Okogie come in as a screener. And like, I think that's another thing where whoever Luke Kennard is on, that's the guy you're not targeting Marcus. You're not targeting Rui. You're not targeting LeBron. Luke is the obvious guy that you would go after. And we had seen that kind of down the stretch of the season, smarter teams and better teams had started to target Kennard. And right before the injuries, like, he hadn't been playing as much as he had earlier in the season. And I think that's a low hanging fruit thing of like, wherever Luke Kennard is, especially with his shooting and how much he's moving offensively, you need to tire him out. You need to get him in foul trouble. You need to target him. So I think that's an obvious thing from the Houston side that I was shocked they did not do, with how much the Lakers switch, try to get Şengün in the post against Luke Kennard and get the Lakers to double and rotate out of that, or try to get Amen Thompson ISO'd against him or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think from the Houston side, KD is obviously the big thing that's going to swing this series on both sides of the ball. But in the meantime, I think they could try to do a better job of attacking Luke, you know, putting him in every action defensively. And then defensively, I mean, I don't know that I don't have a great solve for that one.
Can they do it? Like, I think the adjustments are there to be made. I think that they present other issues though, Pete. If they attack Kennard, like I think sometimes one of the things that like smarter coaches will sometimes do is they'll throw a switch target, you know, or somebody that a weak point in the defense out there at some other players so that the other team takes the bait and the ball is no longer in so-and-so player's hand. Right. And I feel like you can kind of use Kennard in some of those same ways too here. You were of the three of us more confident about the Lakers' chances going into this thing. Have no reason for that confidence to sway here. So where do you stand on how the rest of the series plays out?
Well, I'd actually love to zero in on that specific of, say, they want to target Kennard and what that might look like and how the Lakers might counter that, because this speaks to part of the reason why I'm confident in that. I think the Lakers have natural answers for a lot of the stuff that they might want to do. And so the first question I have in that idea of targeting Kennard more is, okay, well, with who? And so they wanted to initiate a lot of their offense through Şengün. But the problem is you could run some inverted ball screens, but if Kennard is on Okogie, there are a couple of things that can happen off of that. One, you can just go under the screen and say, if Şengün's going to be hitting pull-up threes off of ball screens against us, we'll live with that. Like, that's a shot you're totally fine with. And so the inverted ball screens work less with him than with somebody that can actually pull up and hit the three in the first place. Secondly, is that if you trap that, then you put Okogie in the natural 4-on-3, which is another circumstance where the Lakers are like, Josh Okogie playmaking in a 4-on-3. We can zone up off of that. Like, we can live with that sort of thing. And so I think that's part of the rationale why. I do think there are some tactical things that they can do, and Reed Shepard is kind of at the center of some of the two-man action in those circumstances, where if you wanted to target, say, Şengün against Kennard in the post, it would require enough ball handling and perimeter threat offensively to like be a threat themselves and then make the post entry. Meaning that if you have, say, Josh Okogie do that, it's like, well, I don't care. You go ahead and shoot that. I'm gonna back off you and take you. Like, let's help Luke. And they're gonna have to help Luke out anyway. And so, yeah, if they can do that. But the thing that I saw on tape that I thought was most promising is just sort of a continuation of their smash mouth basketball, of that they had some high low passes at the end of that game that, as they were trying to kind of desperately get back into it, where Şengün had the ball at the nail, like right at the free throw line. But then there was another player that had gone from the dunker spot or the corner and moved all the way in and cut to the lane line. And it's like very phone booth basketball. And the Lakers are really weak on that second level, that like 3 to 8 feet type of range, just in terms of they don't have a lot of bodies there in a lot of circumstances. They're getting really washed out. And so I think that you might see Houston condense their offense a bit. KD, again, is obviously the biggest swing factor overall offensively. But Jovan, they're going to have to get something out of the Şengün touches. Even if KD plays, for them to win the series, they've got to have like quality, we run stuff through Şengün type of offense. And I think Ayton did a really good job on him one-on-one, that sort of prevented some of the, oh crap, we need to send a second guy in the first place.
Ayton straight up outplayed Şengün.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the points that I've been making on my show over the last couple of days, you know, because Lakers fans are always going to be kind of interested about the offseason ahead or whatever, but this has really kind of told me, look at what the Lakers are when Ayton is at his best. How can I get a center in here who can be at that level more frequently? But like, as far as this series goes with the Ayton and Şengün matchup and what the Lakers can do to limit him, I like they really went at Capella, as you guys have talked about, really went at Shepherd. But Sengun to me is like, if they're able to put even a little bit of doubt in Udoka's head about those Sengun matchups and those minutes and what he can do defensively, that's the backbreaker. That's Bane putting Batman over his knee. Yeah, Pete, do you think that's even a possibility here with him? Because he was so clearly frustrated.
He is, and the Lakers did plenty of that targeting. Like, a big part of Kennard's game one was the degree that they targeted Sengun and the level that they can run their handoff series, that they can run like the flare screen action, the side-to-side stuff that the Lakers run in their offense is predicated in part because Sengun can't move his feet and get out to the perimeter in the first place. I think Jovan is spot on that once KD gets back along with the offensive benefit that's obvious, just being able to go to that small ball look with KD at the four and Smith at the five, like it's the main thing that they go to that can take away sort of the natural stuff that was working for the Lakers in game one, but none of it works without KD.